Hezbollah and Israel stand on the brink of all-out war.
Our situation is like garbage. Strikes, planes hovering, and a war of total destruction.
School starts in Russia with a new subject to learn.
The children are being continuously taught to get accustomed to the idea that a war, this is good.
And trimming trees with dynamite.
So here you don't have trees that have been cut with a chainsaw, and you can see these evil scars.
Today is Wednesday, September 25th.
And this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Alexis Strobe.
For just about a year now, Israel and Hezbollah have been trading fire across the Lebanese border. Now the two are engaged in ferocious confrontations that threaten to turn into a full-blown war. Here's Reuters correspondent Emma Jaley with the latest.
Israel's military said an airstrike on Beirut killed the commander of Hezbollah's missile and rocket force on Tuesday, as cross-border attacks by both sides increased. Lebanon reported more than 560 people had been killed, including 50 children, and more than 1,800 wounded since Israel launched heavy strikes on Monday morning, the country's health minister told Al Jazeera Mubasher TV. Israel's military later said the Air Force also conducted extensive strikes on Hezbollah targets, including weapons storage facilities and dozens of launchers that were aimed at Israeli territory. Israeli military spokesperson Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari addressed the situation in a live televised statement.
We strive that the operation is as short as possible. That is why we are striking with huge power. Thus, we have to be prepared for it to take time.
Hezbollah said it launched rockets on Tuesday at the Dado military base in northern Israel and attacked the Atlit naval base south of Haifa with drones. In Lebanon, families from the south clogged the highways fleeing north. Members of the Sidon municipality said they have received at least 3,000 displaced people and have so far opened 14 schools to host them.
Our situation is like garbage. Strikes, planes hovering, and a war of total destruction.
Israel's new offensive against Hezbollah has stoked fears that nearly a year of conflict between Israel and the militant Palestinian group Hamas in Gaza could destabilize the Middle East. At the UN, U.S. President Joe Biden sought to calm tensions.
Full-scale war is not in anyone's interest. Even if the situation has escalated, a diplomatic solution is still possible.
Meanwhile, Israel's UN ambassador, Danny Dannon, said Israel was open to ideas for de-escalating the conflict in Lebanon.
We had experience in Lebanon in the past. We are not eager to start any ground invasion anywhere.
Israel wants to secure its northern border and allow displaced residents to return. This has set the stage for a long conflict, while Hezbollah said it will not back down until a ceasefire is reached in Gaza. The fighting has raised fears that the United States, Israel's close ally, and regional power Iran, which has proxies across the Middle East, will be sucked into a wider war.
Reuters correspondent Emma Jaley.
As the fighting between Israel and Hezbollah intensifies, tens of thousands of Lebanese are heading north to get away from a wave of deadly Israeli airstrikes. In northern Israeli cities and towns, people are hunkered down in safe rooms as volleys of Hezbollah rockets rain down on them. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman has this part of the story.
A technical institute in the Lebanese capital, Beirut, was converted into a shelter for those displaced. Rima Ali Shaheen told Reuters her family spent 16 hours on the road under bombardment to get here.
It has caused anxiety for the kids. They're on edge. If they hear a door slammed, they would go crazy. It's a lot of pressure for grown-ups and children. They're exhausted and stressed. They could not sleep. There's no calmness or quiet. We hear news of bombardment here or there. It is very stressful for the kids. They are living through terrible conditions.
An official from the Sidon municipality said the city had opened 14 schools to house around 3,000 displaced people seeking shelter and that the numbers were climbing. This man told Reuters the situation was like garbage, a war of total destruction. Israel said it struck a Hezbollah-controlled area of Beirut for a second consecutive day after mounting a new wave of airstrikes on targets in Lebanon. Hezbollah said it had fired rockets into northern Israel earlier on Tuesday. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Tuesday reiterated his position that his country was at war with Hezbollah, not the people of Lebanon. He said the Iranian-backed militant group was endangering the population by secreting weapons in their homes, and his message followed one Monday, calling on civilians to flee the fighting. Lebanese authorities said some 558 people had been killed in airstrikes on Monday, including 50 children and 94 women. At least 1,835 more were wounded, they said, and tens of thousands have fled for safety. A hospital in Tyre is treating some of the injured children. Another in Beirut opened new wards to treat war wounded. South of the border, Israelis are similarly seeking shelter. Dashboard-mounted camera on this car shows motorists pulling over and taking cover as a rocket struck just up the road. A municipal building in the border town of Kiryat Shmona was hit by a Hezbollah rocket on Tuesday. In Nahariya, a beachfront city familiar with air raid sirens, 53-year-old Yehuda Kidron said residents knew the protocols to stay safe.
You have to follow the rules. If there's an alarm, you have to hide, you have to lie down, then maybe go to a safe room. But if you're not, you're on the street, you have to lie down away from the car. That's the only thing you have to do.
Siblings Yonatan and Mia Shorek live in the Israeli city of Haifa. Mia said the booms were loud and frightening during an evening of air raid sirens and explosions as rocket fire from Lebanon was intercepted in the skies above. The Israel-Lebanon border has simmered with tension in parallel to the war in Gaza, tensions that have raised fears of an all-out war. The Israeli government has made securing the northern border a war priority, setting the stage for a long conflict, while Hezbollah has vowed it will not back down until a ceasefire is reached in Gaza.
Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. Britain on Tuesday mobilized hundreds of soldiers to Cyprus to help its nationals evacuate as the escalation between Israel and Hezbollah continues. The British government is urging people to leave immediately.
At the United Nations on Tuesday, U.S. President Joe Biden gave his final speech to the General Assembly as president.
My fellow leaders, today is the fourth time I've had the great honor of speaking to this assembly as President of the United States. It'll be my last.
With 4 months left in office, Biden stepped up to the green marbled lectern on the UN General Assembly stage with wars in Ukraine and the Gaza Strip and Sudan still raging and likely to outlast his presidency, which ends in January. And he delivered a message of hope.
I've seen a remarkable sweep of history.
With more on Biden's wind down of his 50 years in public life and the UN General Assembly meeting in New York, there's VOA's White House correspondent Anita Powell.
Hope, unity, and service. President Joe Biden's parting message to world leaders in his final speech to the United Nations General Assembly on Tuesday. The U.S. leader covered a lot of ground in his valedictory address before world leaders. As expected, he urged the world to work together to end conflicts in Gaza, Ukraine, and Sudan. And he touted his administration's work in health and climate mitigation. But it was this line, about his decision not to seek re-election, that garnered the most applause from the audience, which included leaders from the body's 193 member states.
My fellow leaders, let us never forget, some things are more important than staying in power. It's your people.
But his call for a peace deal to end spreading conflict in the Middle East shows how deeply divided this international body is.
Even if the situation has escalated, a diplomatic solution is still possible. In fact, it remains the only path to lasting security to allow the residents from both countries to return to their homes and the border safely. And that's what we're working tirelessly to achieve.
But the conflict in Gaza, like the one in Ukraine, will likely not end with Biden's presidency, analysts say. American Enterprise Institute senior fellow John Fortier.
I think the president is trying to toe the line that he's always towed, support for Israel, but really indicating also some sympathy and understanding of the plight in Gaza and some hope that it will be resolved. but not really being able to control the situation very directly.
Washington's strong support of Israel has tested its standing at the UN, where many members are critical of Israel's action, both in Gaza and now in Lebanon. On Tuesday, the head of the international body warned of what he called politically indefensible and morally intolerable impunity. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
Nothing can justify the abhorrent acts of terror committed by Hamas on October 7th or the taking of hostages, both of which I have repeatedly condemned. And nothing can justify the collective punishment of the Palestinian people.
This annual event is a chance for the world's governments to discuss shared challenges and shared visions. The big question now, from Gaza to Ukraine to Sudan, what are they going to do about it? Anita Powell, VOA News, New York.
We're following these other stories from around the world. Boeing said on Tuesday it has offered to extend the timeline for a vote on a new contract by the union representing thousands of its striking U.S. West Coast workers after they rejected the company's initial Friday deadline.
In Sweden, thousands of text messages calling for revenge over the burning of the Quran were sent to seemingly random phone numbers. The Swedish government says that Iran was behind it. Iran denies the accusation.
The man accused of staking out Donald Trump's Florida golf course with a rifle was indicted on Tuesday on a charge of attempted assassination of a political candidate. Prosecutors alleged he intended to kill the former U.S. president.
In our continuing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election, the uncommitted national movement that began as a protest against President Joe Biden's policies on the war in Gaza last week announced they will not endorse Vice President Kamala Harris, the Democratic presidential candidate. Another pro-Palestinian group, Abandon Harris, says they're working to ensure her defeat. Could these movements affect election results in battleground states? White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wodakiswara brings us this story from Michigan, the state with the highest percentage of Arab Americans.
Dearborn, Michigan is known as the Arab capital of America. In this Arab-majority city, in a state that is home to almost 400,000 Arab Americans, many are angry over U.S. policies on the war in Gaza. Abdallah Doleh is a Palestinian American.
I'm not happy with what's happening, and I'm not really hopeful anything is going to change anytime soon. Even if Kamala Harris comes into play, I don't think she's going to be capable to do a whole lot of change.
I will not be silent.
Kamala Harris's campaign has been targeting Dearborn with ads showing her sympathy to the suffering in Gaza.
Vice President Harris has chosen a side.
But a political group with Republican ties is also targeting those voters with ads highlighting Harris' support for Israel and the Jewish faith of her husband, Doug Emhoff.
We can trust she'll always support Israel.
The ads appear aimed at the 100,000 Michiganders who voted uncommitted in the Democratic primary election to protest the Biden administration's support of Israel's military campaign. When Harris visited Michigan last week, the Uncommitted National Movement announced they will not endorse her.
Myself, a Palestinian American, that, I've been a lifelong Democrat. I would love to be part of the voting bloc that elects the very first black female president. But Vice President Harris has not shown me that she will protect people I care about.
Harris says she supports both Israeli security and Palestinian rights.
President Biden and I are working to end this war such that Israel is secure, the hostages are released, the suffering in Gaza ends, and the Palestinian people can realize their right to dignity, security, freedom, and self-determination.
While not endorsing Harris, the uncommitted group also opposes Donald Trump, who they fear is even more supportive of Israel.
When I'm back in the Oval Office, I will support Israel's right to win its war on terror. They have to have a right to win the war.
Another pro-Palestinian group, Abandon Harris, says it's working to ensure her defeat, even if it means a Trump victory. Co-chair Farah Khan.
I don't think there's any difference in policy when it comes to Palestine or foreign policy. When you talk about these two, they're equally evil. So it doesn't really matter to me.
Abandon Harris is encouraging voters to support anti-war third-party candidates, such as Green Party nominee Jill Stein.
In this swing state, Harris and Trump are virtually tied in the polls. In 2020, Biden won over Trump by 154,000 votes. And in 2016, Trump won over Hillary Clinton by just under 11,000 votes.
But losing votes over Gaza may not necessarily mean Harris loses Michigan. The United Automobile Workers Labor Union, a key political force in the state, has endorsed her, and her campaign is working to boost support from Black voters. Ronald Stockton is professor emeritus at the University of Michigan.
If the Black turnout goes up and Arab American voting goes down for the Democrats, will those cancel each other out? I don't know. With the unions out there banging on the doors and doing everything they can, the UAW, that's going to make a difference.
Another variable would be Trump making inroads with Arab and Muslim voters. Amir Ghalib, the Yemeni-American mayor of Hamtramck, endorsed Trump after meeting him last week. The endorsement carries symbolic significance. The city of Hamtramck is home to 30,000 people, many of them Muslim. It's the only city in the country to have an all-Muslim city council. Patsy Widakuswara and Rifan Dwi Astono, VOA News, Michigan.
The World Food Program warns that hundreds of thousands of starving Sudanese could die without urgent international assistance. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The United Nations World Food Program says time is running out to save the lives of many of the 1.5 million people who are facing famine or are on the brink of famine in war-torn Sudan. WFP says it is working to get food to people who have little or nothing to eat. Despite the security risks, it says aid workers have managed to support 5.4 million people with life-saving food aid this year. WFP Sudan spokesperson Lenny Kinsley says these efforts are paying off. Thousands of lives are being saved every day. But given the severity of the problem, she says these efforts are not enough.
Even though we are doing everything we can, it's just a drop in the ocean compared to the needs, not just in Sudan, but regionally. Around 36 million people have been pushed into hunger because of this ongoing war.
Speaking on a video link from Nairobi, Kenya on Tuesday, Kinsley said WFP was taking advantage of the reopening of the Adre border from Chad to send daily food convoys into the conflict-ravaged Darfur region. She says WFP has transported 2,800 metric tons of food into the Darfur region since the border crossing was reopened a month ago. Enough food aid for more than 250,000 people. While this is encouraging, she says a recent visit to Adre, Chad, where some 800,000 people have fled, made her realize how much more aid was needed to get on top of Sudan's food crisis. She says all the people she met in Adre were hungry and destitute. Despite receiving food assistance, she says many people are struggling to get by, eating one meal a day if they are lucky.
Like a teenage girl I met called Turaya, who lost her parents and is taking care of her younger siblings. Sometimes she's only able to offer them water instead of a meal. If that is the situation for people in a comparably safe and stable place, it is hard to imagine what people facing famine or at risk of famine in Sudan are going through.
The UN considers the Sudan conflict, which began in April 2023, to be the world's worst humanitarian crisis. More than 8 million people have been internally displaced by violence, and 2 million have fled to other countries. The UN says at least 25 million people need food and other aid. The World Food Program is urgently appealing for $600 million to provide life-saving food assistance over the next 6 months to millions of acutely hungry people. The UN agency warns it cannot stop widespread starvation and hunger-related deaths without the support of the international community. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Alexis Strobe.
So the new school year is beginning in Russia. It's the third new school start, with Moscow's war in Ukraine as a backdrop. Elizabeth Chernoff narrates this report from Ricardo Marquina on what critics say are Russia's moves to militarize education by introducing new subjects that explain and justify its full-scale invasion of Ukraine.
Critics say the education system has been one of the primary targets of Russian militaristic propaganda after the start of Moscow's full-scale invasion of Ukraine 2 years ago. The focus is on the youngest, says exiled Russian anthropology professor Alexandra Arkhipova.
Schools are under much more pressure, especially junior schools. The children are being continuously taught to get accustomed to the idea that a war, this is good. A militarization and a militarized public, this is completely correct.
The changes in the curriculum are especially visible in everything related to the history of Russia and its role in the world, as well as its relationship with Ukraine. For example, textbooks claim the so-called, quote, special military operation, as the invasion of Ukraine is known in Russia, was justified and that Russia never shells civilian areas. Controlling the historical narrative is a priority for the Kremlin, says former Russian linguistics professor Svetlana Drugoveko.
History is what shapes the self-consciousness of the nation. That's why it is clear that a great deal depends on what kind of emphasis is made in the textbook.
Critics call it politicization and militarization of education, and they say the directives have put teachers in a difficult situation. Independent organizations outside Russia say that since 2022, 148 teachers have been persecuted for voicing what authorities considered pacifist stances in the classroom. Most lost their jobs. Students and parents still have options to avoid getting caught up in the government's campaign, says a Moscow primary school teacher who asked to remain anonymous.
At the school, funds are collected periodically to help the soldiers. Parents of children are notified by text message that there will be a collection of aid for the front. But it's up to the parents to participate or not.
But in a country with a long tradition of praising those who fight its wars, experts say no one escapes militarization, not even children. For Ricardo Marquina, Elizabeth Chernoff, VOA News.
Singapore commissioned two new advanced submarines on Tuesday. Prime Minister Lawrence Wong says the ships are to protect the nation's waters and its undersea communication cables.
Over the years, our submariners gained the experience and expertise to build more robust capabilities. Today, we stand confident not just to procure new-built submarines, but also to customize them to meet our specific operational requirements. The Invincible-class submarines are fitted with advanced technology, allowing for leaner crews and better maneuverability in our congested waters. They are quieter, more durable, and better armed than anything we've had before.
The country's fifth and sixth submarines, the Invincible and the Impeccable, were ordered from Germany in 2013 in a 1 billion euro deal.
And finally, that's dynamite being used to trim trees.
So here you don't have trees that have been cut with a chainsaw, and you can see these evil scars.
That's Jess Agard, a biologist in Copenhagen. The tree in a Danish park was damaged, and branches might have fallen on people who use the park.
We put some dynamite in some small hole, and we detonate it, and in that way we arrange a stroke of a lightning. So the people coming here afterwards will say, whoa, there's been a lightning stroke here.
And it's not just the look of the tree. He says it will also help with all the things that live in the park.
There is two main reasons for using this method. One is the ethic, that it's so much nicer to see a natural breakdown. And the other thing that's much more important is the biodiversity. And what we left now is this torso of the steam standing up, and that is going to be a hotel of biodiversity for the next 20, 30 years or so. And there will be bats, there will be insects, there will be mushrooms or whatever, who all likes to eat this dead or dying wood that is left over.
Having fun with science.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for joining us.
For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com.
In Washington, with Alexis Strope, I'm Scott Wolterman.